Okay, so welcome everyone. Again, my name is Peggy O'Neill, and as you just heard, we are recording the call, and after the call today, it will be available on the Tyson Center website. If you're not talking and you have noise in the background, we'd welcome, or we'd appreciate it if you would mute your phone. And I'll remind you of this again later, but we will have a question and answer period, and if you would, state your name as you're asking your question so we know who's asking the question. To get us started today, I'm going to read from, and Judy Neal is our guest today. I'm Peggy O'Neill, the hosting this. And to get us started, I'm going to read some excerpts from Judy's wonderful book, Edgewalkers. And the first excerpt I'm going to read is on page one. It's in chapter one, Why Now, Why Edgewalkers? The complexity of the business world today is astounding. Nothing is predictable anymore. The rules of the game are changing. Just when you think you have figured out how to have a competitive advantage, a competitor develops a new technology. Just when you think you have found the right motivation tool, the values in your workplace seem to shift. Just when you think you have found the right geographic area for the expansion of your internationalization efforts, political turmoil erupts. Yet, some people seem to have an uncanny knack for knowing what's going to happen before it unfolds. They are able to create new rules of the game instead of following the rules that everyone else follows. They are able to plan a strategy that seems absurd to most people at first and is later called brilliant when they are successful. They are a part of an unusual breed of leaders called edgewalkers. And further in the book, on page 97, Kermit the Frog used to sing, "It's not easy being green." Edgewalkers understand the message of that song. It's not easy being an edgewalker. You see things that other people don't see. You know things in your bones that other people adamantly disagree with. If people really knew what you were about, they would think you were crazy. Sometimes you think maybe they are right. Maybe you are crazy. Yet you have a strong commitment to being authentic and being true to your values and vision. Like Don Quixote, you are going to keep tilting at windmills. At least that's how it feels sometimes. So we'll spend about 30 seconds in silence being with this beautiful message from Judy. Okay, if you'll come back. This teleconference is sponsored by the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the Sam M. Walton College of Business, University of Arkansas. The purpose of this series of calls that we've been having on coaching is to educate listeners about the value of coaching and integrating faith and spirituality in the workplace, and to help people become familiar with our Tyson Center coaches and their styles and philosophies of working. Our guest today is Judy Neal. After receiving her PhD in organizational behavior from Yale University, Judith worked 9 years full-time in the industry, including time as the manager of organizational development and training at Honeywell. She has consulted to organizations for 28 years and taught management at the University of New Haven and other universities for over 17 years. She has served on the boards of directors of several professional, community, and academic organizations. Her clients include Pfizer, Unilever, Electric Boat, Hewlett-Packard, General Electric, Rodale Press, Rockport Company, Yankee Gas, Jackson Newspapers, and numerous smaller organizations. In 1992, she made faith and spirituality in the workplace a central focus of her research and presentations and has gained a reputation in the national and international media for stressing the importance and value of faith and spirituality in the workplace. As founder and executive director of the International Center for Faith, as founder and executive director of the International Center for Spirit at Work, Judith helped to provide resources, information, and community to those who seek greater integration of faith, spirituality, and work. One of our major contributions to the field was the creation of the International Spirit at Work Awards, which honored organizations explicit about nurturing the human spirit. Judith is currently the founding director of the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality at the Sam M. Walton College of Business, University of Arkansas, assuming that role in 2009, and we're very grateful that she came to Arkansas and joined us at that time. She's the author of Edgewalkers, People and Organizations That Take Risks, Build Bridges, and Break New Ground. She's co-author with Alan Harfam of The Spirit of Project Management and the author of the forthcoming Handbook for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace. She is a certified spiritual intelligence coach and uses that tool, SQ21, and her Edgewalker profile in her coaching. She's also a contributing editor to the Virtuous Organization. So thank you very much, Judy, for joining us in this capacity today. You get to be our guest today.
It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, but it is. It's kind of turned the tables a little bit here.
Yeah, thank you for being the host, Peggy. I really appreciate all you're doing.
Oh, you're welcome. I've really enjoyed this, doing this series. So what we're going to do now, I'm going to ask Judy some questions, and after a while we'll open for everybody to be able to ask questions. And so tell us, Judy, something about how you moved from the corporate world into the coaching field.
Well, it was really more moving from the academic world into the organizational world, which included coaching. And it started really from student advising for me. I loved having one-on-one meetings with students and listening to them about their hopes and dreams and what courses to take and what major to be in. And I think if the university knew what I was doing, they would have fired me long ago. But I would talk a lot of students out of majoring in business because their heart wasn't in it. Mm. You know, they were doing what daddy wanted them to do or what mommy wanted them to do, and that was not what their passion and calling was. And I was really getting onto my spiritual path back, this is like 20 years ago, and starting to really practice different spiritual practices like prayer before I went into the classroom, or being in my heart whenever I was with someone, trying to see the divine in them, trying to listen deeply. And so when I had a student in front of me, I would actually have a meditation that I would do while talking with them, which was first to really go into my heart and feel my heart opening, and then look at them and see their heart glowing, and then see this channel of light between my heart and their heart, and know that I just truly believe that I was there to help them understand their heart's desire. And so often when I was talking with a student, I would just suddenly find myself saying, like, well, that's not what you really love doing, is it? Tell me about something in high school that was really exciting and energizing for you. some crazy thing like that. And, you know, or I'd say, what is history? I'm getting history. And, you know, kind of like a medium might do. You know, but I'd say, I'm getting some sense of history here that's you're not talking about. Why don't you say something about that? And you find out that, you know, they loved history more than anything when they were in high school, and that's really, they wanted to be a history teacher, but dad told them that he had to go into the family business. And, you know, so those kinds of things would happen when I was with students. And I realized that when I got into doing work in the corporate world, that those skills were very useful to help leaders. That it was a combination of intuition and observing body language and really listening and being there to be of service to them. Jane Nibelung, who's on this call, really sees leadership as being service to love. And, you know, I think that's what I was seeing myself as doing, is being in service to love, being in the middle of that love with that person in front of me, and then being of service to that, so that I could bring out what their dreams were and what their gifts were. So that's really how it all started for me. And then when I started to get consulting work, I brought the skills I developed with students into my work with, you know, when I worked one-on-one with clients.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, that's a beautiful description of really being with someone and being in service to them. Thank you for that. And so you helped steer some people away from business, and you moved into consulting. And so how do you connect faith and spirit and coaching faith and spirit in the workplace? I can definitely experience your connection to that and being with someone. Mm-hmm. And then how do you translate that in the workplace?
Well, most people in the workplace, I believe, are hungry to be deeper in touch with their own spirit, and to be able to express their faith, whatever that is, whether it's in a religious tradition or just faith that there is some kind of sense in the universe, or that there's a greater intelligence that we can tap into. And that doesn't get talked about in business very much. A friend of mine, Andre Delbecq, who will be a speaker at our conference this year, Andre talks about how leaders are hungry to talk about their inner life, and there's no permission to do that anywhere, and there's no support for leaders. You know, they really have got to put on this strong, in-control kind of, I would call it a mask, in terms of like the persona, you know, the faith that you have to the rest of the world, even if you're not always feeling strong and sure. You've got to play that role. And so the inner life ends up getting dimmer and dimmer. So spirituality to me is about meaning and purpose in the world. It's about living your deepest values. It's about being loving in an agape kind of way. And I think that what I found in my experience is leaders just need permission to do that, and they need some language to do that. That it's what most leaders would like to do and don't think that that's what's acceptable.
And what are when you've worked with people in that way, can you give us a couple of stories about the difference it's made for them or the organization?
Well, once again, you know, I can give you a story where I was a troublemaker.
Okay.
You know, like there's this one fellow in a company where we were doing, I had a partner that we named Thad Henry, that he and I were doing work with a company and coaching all the top leaders. And so there was one particular person who was the leader of a division, and you know, I never talked openly about spirituality at first, but it just came up with him when I would ask him about what gave him energy and what inspired him, and you know, what were some of his core values. And he said, in terms of one of his core values, that he wanted to live his spirituality more. And so we talked about how he might do that. And part of that was like, from now on at lunch, he was going to go out and walk in the woods because that's what nourished his spirit. And in the process of spending time outdoors, he realized that his real calling is music. And so he ended up leaving the company and starting a very successful recording studio.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, maybe I have this particular role of helping people get out of places that they don't fit.
Yeah, and what a benefit, though, that is to both the organization and
yeah,
the individual.
Yeah, organizations may not want to hire you if that's what you end up doing. let's see if there's another example that I could give you. There's a fellow in that same company who was from Germany, and you know, his culture really trained him to be pretty brusque and you know, kind of commanding and data-based. And in the coaching process with him, I found that he was really feeling like he wanted better relationships with the people that he worked with, and he really cared about them, but he didn't know it was okay to show that. And so as we talked, we looked at his values around relationships and his own spiritual values and the kind of person that he really wanted to be that would give him a greater sense of meaning and purpose in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And he just started to get softer and softer, and was amazing because he was had turnover, high turnover in his area, and people were wanting to go and work for somebody else basically because he just seemed so cold. And that got turned around, and there was just this whole new sense of team in his area where not only was his relationship with each of the people who reported to him warmer and more productive, there was this sense of bondedness in his whole team. And they were a team that was responsible for increasing sales in a certain product line. And it was within 2 months, the sales figures that had been declining turned around and got very positive. And it really was based on relationship, yeah, and being heart-centered, which he had permission to do, and then he gave other people permission to do that.
Wow.
Now, that was not explicitly spiritual coaching, but I can't do what anything I do without me coming from a spiritual place.
Yeah.
And I don't do it anywhere near as well as I would like. It's my, you know, I'm constantly trying to grow in that area. But
well,
I find...
Well, it sounds like you did a beautiful job. It was beautiful, the work that you did for him and his coworkers, for sure.
Well,
and I know you. So tell us about the Edgewalker approach and model and how you use that. And I'd also be interested in who comes to you for that.
Well, I'm just getting started in that, and this is really, you know, like such a heart calling for me. Writing the Edgewalker book was a real joy, and having conversations with people and workshops and all of that, I just feel so uplifted and energized and inspired when I can talk from that particular perspective. And one of the things that I did is develop an instrument that helps to measure Edgewalker qualities and skills. And that instrument is just being made available now for the public and to be used with coaching. And so I pilot tested that instrument with several people and with the coaching as a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you a little bit about how that works. There are five Edgewalker skills and five Edgewalker qualities, and that's what's measured in the instrument. And the qualities are things like vision and playfulness and integrity and self-awareness. And so people get, they evaluate themselves on each of these different qualities. And the skills are things like knowing the future, being able to manifest, connection at a very deep level. And so they get, they self-evaluate on each of the five skills. And then they get a report that gives them feedback on how they've assessed themselves on these skills and some suggestions for development at whatever level they assess themselves at. And then we talk about what they'd like to work on, because it's really in any professional, personal or professional development, it always, I believe, coaching needs to support people in what they want to work on, not what an instrument tells them or not what I tell them. You know, it really has to be something that they choose. And so they can look at the particular qualities and particular skills that they want to work on, and then I make suggestions about ways they might do that, and they commit to certain actions, and then as a coach, I hold them accountable, and we follow up and see how they did with those actions, you know, and then it's a continual process of tweaking and support and then seeing what else they want to work on. And so I've done that with people in a hospital, leadership in a faith-based hospital, and with people in a construction engineering firm in Puerto Rico.
Oh,
so
wow.
Two very different kinds of environments, you know, one being a Catholic faith-based hospital and then the other, you know, being engineering-focused. And I find that the issues tend to be the same for people. It doesn't matter what kind of industry you're in. the issues for leadership and for people on the spiritual path, you know, are human issues. And I find it's just such a joy to accompany people on that journey. I really, really love doing that.
And I know you were recently certified with the spiritual intelligence tool and model. How do you see yourself integrating those or working with the two different approaches? Or maybe they're not different.
Yeah, they're different approaches.
Oh, okay.
And they're different tools. So they measure different things. And Sarah Miller, who's on this call and who's one of the Tyson Center coaches, is also certified in spiritual intelligence coaching. And one of the things after you do the certification is you need to practice with two people. They take the instrument, and that's the same thing that happens. I'm certifying people in the Edgewalker coaching. You know, you get certified and learn how to use the instrument, and then you practice on people. I'll talk more about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But with the spiritual intelligence, I have two people that I've just practiced with, and one is a woman who's starting her own business, and the other is a student who's going to be a senior who is a mystic. He is, like, so amazing, this young man who sees things that most people in this world just don't see. He has just a loving, wonderful spiritual energy. But at, you know, 20 years old, he's got no clue what to do with this.
Oh.
And so the spiritual intelligence instrument measures 21 skills. And there are skills at the individual level and the social level, and there's inner work and there's outer work, inner expressions and outer expressions of that. And it's very similar to, it's based on the emotional intelligence four quadrants, but it goes beyond that, and it's very similar to Ken Wilber's four quadrants as well, that they overlay on each other.
Okay.
And so it's the we go through the instrument and look at what skills someone wants to work on, and invariably people want to work on the ones they have the lowest score on. And that's not necessarily the way it works with any instrument. You know, I really like to take a strength-based approach to coaching people. And so if some area is not particularly a strength, it's my attitude is generally, unless you've really got a hunger to focus on that, I think it's better to focus on your strengths and make those stronger, because those are your gifts. That's what you're called to do. So I try to guide people towards their strengths rather than the zeros or the ones, you know, the low score is on their survey. But if that's what somebody really wants to focus on, then we do. Usually it's more kind of hand-holding and affirming for them that they're a person of value, even if they scored something zero.
Oh, yeah.
You know, helping to understand why that score is there for now and what they might want to do about it. But I really try to focus much more on where they're strong and where they're going. And then in terms of each skill, whatever skill they focus on, there may be particular spiritual exercises or a particular workshop that might be recommended, or particular action that they might want to commit to, or particular spiritual practice of some kind. So for each person, it's very unique, and I do think it takes a lot of deep listening and a lot of intuition, and again, being in service to love while being with them to see what's going to serve that person the most. And I just love when someone gets an aha. I think everybody that's been interviewed for this coaches series says that same thing. It's like, if you can create a climate that allows someone to see something of themselves that they didn't see before, you know, this little wake up, it's like, oh, I get it. You know, and to see them get free of something that held them back before, or see them move towards a dream that they didn't think they could actually do, that just makes life worth living.
Very. That's wonderful. Now, did you want to tell us now about the that people can learn to use the Edgewalker instrument, or
Sure.
okay.
Yeah, what I'm doing is developing a webinar series. So this is going to be really inexpensive, easy to access for people. It takes a month to take the course. So there's three series of webinars, you know, on an average about 2 hours long. And it introduces the concepts of Edgewalkers, a little bit about how the instrument was created, and then we go through and talk about how to interpret the instrument. After the first session, people go and ask a couple of people to take the instrument, and that's covered under the cost of taking the webinar. So they practice with a couple of people. So they have them take the instrument, and then the next call, we really talk about how to interpret the results and how to give feedback to people in a way that supports their journey. And so after the second call, they do a practice coaching session and look at what worked and what didn't work, and then they report that in the third call, and we provide whatever kind of support needs to happen for people to learn from that coaching experience, and then talk about what kind of ongoing support and resources there are for the coaches. So once they've gone through the webinar, then they're certified to coach using the instrument, and you know, they're given keys on how to get into the website and work with the instrument, and they get a discount if they use that instrument with clients. So every time that they use the instrument, they actually make a little bit of money.
Okay. And if somebody wanted to follow up after this call to find out more about when and everything, would they go to the Edgewalker site?
Right now it's not up yet. I mean, there's some things up there in a general way, but it's not going to be scheduled until November. I'm putting all my focus on the conference, which
we'll talk more about the conference later.
So I'm putting that off until November. We'll start that educational series in November. Beginning of November, middle of November, and beginning of December is when it's over. So if somebody wants to at least be informed of that, they will get the information. Well, they need to be on the Edgewalker listserv. I won't be marketing that through the Tyson Center. So that'll be a separate thing.
And the Edgewalker site is edgewalker.org.
O-R-G.
Org. Org.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Okay. So you're quite a musician. Those of us who know you are probably who know you at all know that you're quite a musician. And I'm curious, do you use music in your coaching at all?
Now, I don't use it in the one-on-one coaching. Actually, that's not totally true. There's a woman that some of you know from Dubai, Susan Furness, and as part of her certification as an Edgewalker, I coached her for a year, and there were different exercises I gave her that required her to listen to music before she did a particular spiritual exercise, as you know, as a way of getting centered. But I didn't like sing to her. During the coaching session. When I do Edgewalker workshops, when I do almost any kind of workshop, I'll bring music into it. Because I think music is a way of directly speaking to the soul. It really helps people just get right to the heart of things. In a way, music, poetry, drama, all of the arts get beyond our sort of day-to-day defenses and touch that which is deepest in us. And so I love to use music and other artistic forms to help tap into that. I created a CD back in 1996. It's called The Journey. And I don't think I've ever seen this on any other CD. And it's all songs I wrote. But on the insert, there's actually descriptions on how you can use these songs for different experiential exercises in a workshop or for different...
Oh, really? Oh, how nice.
Yeah, it's, it's like it's the workshop leader in me. I couldn't help but say,
Oh.
here's when you could use this song, or in your own personal work, this is how you could use the various kinds of music for different personal and professional growth.
Okay, well, I will pause my questions right now and see if anybody else has a question that they'd like to ask Judy while we have her in this format. So, who would like to ask Judy a question?
This is Sarah, and I have a question that's a little unusual, but what did you want to be when you were a child?
I wanted to be a singer and a book author.
Oh, and you've manifested.
Yeah, I have. So I got to have some more dreams. Now, I have this remembrance of myself at 4 years old. Actually, I guess I have two memories, but one of them is sitting on the swing in my backyard, and we live near Los Angeles and Hollywood, and I would hear things about, oh, there are agents, and if you're at the diner and the agent hears you sing, you could be famous overnight. And in my 4-year-old heart and mind, something got captured by that. So I was sitting on my swing, swinging away and singing at the top of my lungs, thinking that an agent might walk by our backyard and hear me. And I remember another time going with my grandfather to, it was actually a vaudeville show. This tells you like how old I am. And I must have been 3 or 4, and I adored my grandfather. And I'm sitting there with him when the curtain comes down. And this is the first time I have ever gone to any kind of public performance. And the show opens up with a couple of people sitting on the stage playing banjo and singing. And I got up out of my seat and started to run to the stage.
Oh, wow.
And my grandfather had to hold me back. And I was a shy child, so this is kind of astounding. But James Hillman wrote a book called The Soul's Code, S-O-U-L, supposed to be a soul's code. And when I read that book, I went, oh, wow. It talks about these stories from childhood that our soul has its calling written on it, and children express that. And we often just ignore it or talk about how unrealistic it is and damp it down. But my work is so much about not about helping people uncover their soul's code again.
I really hear that and feel that today.
That's a great question, Sarah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. And what's another question someone has? Okay, while they're thinking about their questions, Judy, I would
Oh,
like to, is there
looks like
something else
Jane has
you'd
a
like to,
question.
oh, huh?
It's
Who?
not really a question, Judy. It's a comment, and that is, as I'm listening to you, talk about Edgewalkers, and it seems to me that another name for edgewalkers is leaders.
It's leaders.
In the truest sense of the word. In other words, being the first ones in.
Being out on the edge.
Being out on the edge, being the first ones in. And, and in that edgewalkers, and as you eloquently put it, are leaders in service to love.
Yeah, that's just so central.
And that really describes the essence of who an edgewalker is. Not what they do, but who they are.
It's the quality of being.
Quality of being.
Yeah.
And you capture that beautifully.
Thank you. Yeah, your work and mine is just, we use different words for the same thing. We play in the same sandbox.
Well, we sort of play in the same sandbox, and everybody can hear it.
Yeah.
We're singing, if you know what I mean.
I didn't hear that.
We're both singing tunes that are in harmony with each other.
Yeah, I
And
like
people are going to
that.
pick up,
Yeah.
people are going to pick, different people are going to pick up with different in different ways to the different harmony. So
The other thing about edgewalkers and leaders, I mean, leaders, besides being the first one, are also bridge builders. Yeah, because they're committed to something greater than themselves, they can see things that other people see as separate, and they see the wholeness.
Yes.
Yeah, you write about that, and that's very much a part of what I think about when I think about the edgewalkers walk the edge between different worldviews, and they build the bridge so that they can bring together something at a higher level of consciousness. They integrate.
They integrate, and they take the polarities.
Yeah.
And find the common ground.
Right, yeah.
So it's the common ground that serves the common good.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot.
And that's what, you know, whether you label them edgewalkers or, for myself, leading is love, they're creating the common ground for the common good. And
yeah.
That's what leadership is about.
That's right. Yeah, and
sorry,
we need a whole lot more of that in the world, don't we?
Yes, we do. I'm sorry I had to make a comment rather than ask the question.
Oh, it's wonderful. I could sit here and listen to you two talk all day. Beautiful.
Yeah, comments are more than welcome. And so are if you disagree with anything I've said and have a different point of view, I'd love to hear that, because that always enriches the conversation. And yeah, so it's not just about questions. This is a dialogue.
Judy, this is Maureen. I have a question about your spiritual intelligence training. Where is that something you created or you took somewhere?
I took.
Okay.
That is given by Cindy Wigglesworth, who used to be an executive at Exxon and felt her own calling to go deeper into the spiritual aspect of leadership. And she has done a lot of research on emotional intelligence and then what's beyond that with spiritual intelligence. She's been trained in Daniel Goleman's work and Ken Wilber's work and spiral dynamics. And she integrates all of that into an instrument called the SQ21. So that's the 21 skills of spiritual intelligence or spiritual quotient. She's used it in quite a number of organizations, and it's I think she's got about 50 or more certified coaches who are doing work around the country and even in some other countries. And it's just very valid and reliable, strong academic work that's really practical and useful in organizations. She shows how the spiritual intelligence instrument is highly correlated with moral and ethical development in leaders, which, again, we desperately need in the world today, and then shows how people can develop to a higher level. The website for her work is deepchange.com.
And how do you find that topic accepted in the organizations where you coach? How do you approach it with them? What sort of language do you use? And thank you for the information, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm more in an academic setting than I am in workplace settings. And yet, you know, I meet with business leaders all the time and tell them that these are different offerings that the Tyson Center has, that, you know, we can offer people to coach on spiritual intelligence and edgewalkers. And frankly, so far, we have not had a response to that. And so I don't know that I've got the answer to the language yet.
That's a puzzle I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah. You know, I think we're all working on that. I think what I've seen that's been successful is to lead with what a friend of mine, Daryl Connor, calls the Trojan horse or ethical trickery. Actually, Mel Toomey and Daryl Connor use that language, and I can't remember who uses what language. But you need to meet organizational leaders where their needs are. You know, that's typical marketing language. And someone once said, companies cannot buy what's not in their purchasing list. You know, it's like if you're not something they already know how to buy, they're not going to buy from you. So they know how to buy change programs. They know how to buy stress management. They know how to buy leadership development. They know how to buy certain categories of offerings that are traditional. And so we basically need to clothe our work authentically. It is authentically accomplishes the business needs. But I think when we lead with spiritual coaching or spiritual leadership development, it's a hard sell, particularly in an economic climate where only the most survival-related things are getting funded.
Right. I would agree with you.
So my experience is that right now you've got to sell in a traditional way. And what the coaches we're talking about at the Tyson Center with our coaching group is creating programs that meet a business need, that coaching is a piece of that. So if you sell a change management program, then of course coaching has to be a part of that, and self-assessment is a part of coaching, and so different kinds of assessment tools are there, like the Myers-Briggs and spiritual intelligence and Edgewalker qualities and skills. You know, these are different assessments. So it's part of some other package in terms of marketing. That's my take on it right now. I'd love to hear if someone has a different take on it, or also feels the same way. And I do think this will change. In the 90s, there was starting to be an open market for stuff that was explicitly spiritual. And then we had the crash. So, you know, things have shifted. But I do think that there will be a market again. In the meantime, we need to be developing our work, making sure that it is effective, that it makes a difference through whatever kinds of measurement or validations we need to do, and be ready for when things get better. Does that help, Maureen?
Oh, very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Would anyone else like to
chip in? Well, this is
Peggy,
and I basically do what you're talking about, too. I meet the client's needs, knowing that, to me, when there's some sort of suffering, if you will, in an organization, whether it's people not getting along or leaders struggling to lead or if they can't meet their numbers even, to me there's an underlying spiritual need, and I don't necessarily talk about it in that language, and sometimes I do, but I do help them start seeing what's causing this angst, if you will, and or different, that there's a light they're moving towards, so that there's something they're moving towards, something that's calling them to explore something new about themselves or their relationships. And so it's also what you were speaking to, bringing the heart into the coaching and how I am with them and helping them open their hearts. And so that's how I hold it, and don't often use the word spirit or spirituality, but I just hold it as being present and who we are.
And, you know, it's funny because I find it always comes up with my coaching clients. Mm. Now, it could be because I am so blatantly, explicitly, you know, whether it's, you know, director of the Tyson Center of Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace, or the founder of the International Center for Spirit at Work, or, you know, or my book, Edgewalkers, is blatantly spiritual. So, you know, that's part of it. But I think if we're, any of us are listening for the spiritual longings of people we work with, we're going to hear them. And if we help name it for them, it opens up an awful lot. So I'm not afraid to name it for people.
Yeah, well, I'm not either. In fact, one of my clients, an executive that heads a department, the other day, I said to him, I said, well, so what you're really telling me is you want to create a loving environment here where everybody loves each other and really supports and respects each other, right?
Yeah. Oh, that
said,
L
yeah,
word.
That's really what I want. I said, okay, well, that's what we're going to support you in creating. So I didn't use the word spirituality, but to me that's spirit, love. You know, somebody saying, yes, I want to create a loving environment.
And, Judy, this is Lucera Jane. And that's part of the premise of leading is love, is that you can take, and you know I've struggled with this. How long have we known each other? Almost 20 years now?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Like now 15, 20 years, I've struggled with using the S word.
Yeah.
And
Lucira used to be an executive at an insurance company, you know,
it's
real.
Insurance companies.
What? A couple of them?
A couple of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I knew you when you were at Aetna.
Yeah,
and
I was at Aetna, and then I was at Cigna Retirement. So.
Oh, right. Yeah, and, you know, where it's the bottom line that is the language of the realm.
Language of the realm. And even I can, you know, Judy, you know Mike Stevens, who was the chairman of Aetna Canada. And he turned Aetna Canada around using spiritual principles. And I can remember having a meeting with him in his office, you know, one of his executive offices when he was in Hartford. And he said, don't use the S word.
And then he writes a book called Business and Spirituality.
Yes, I know. Well, at the time, and you have to understand the whole context of this. So
when
I think of leading as love, it's almost secular spirituality.
Uh-huh.
It takes it out of the debate of whose denomination is right.
Right.
And gets
love is universal.
Love is universal.
Yeah. At least we hope
so. Peggy, to your point, getting to a loving environment is really what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah, and so what we're hearing is that there are lots of different ways, and it's really honoring what's true for us, I guess, and how we want to communicate and be with our clients and our offerings to our clients and helping them be true to them, that we can talk about it in different ways. And
I think of it as there's many different doorways.
Many different doorways.
Into faith and spirituality in the workplace. Or, you know, you could call them languages.
Yeah.
And so one of them is stress management. One of them is leadership development. You know, stress management really is about body, mind, spirit and the integration of those.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, wellness and all of that is holistic. So that's one way that some people, you know, it really works for them. And another way is through leadership development. And leadership at its core has to start with self-awareness.
Yeah.
Well, for thousands of years, spiritual traditions have developed self-awareness approaches. Mm-hmm. So helping people to discover what really fits for them to enhance their self-awareness and live their core values. You know, so that's one. Change management is another huge one. There's such a need to be able to respond to change. And so I think the Edgewalker approach really fits with that, because it's not only about responding to change, it's about creating change. In terms of research, the Edgewalker instrument has highly correlated with personal resilience to change. We've done some measurement on that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a real business need for people to bounce back from all the changes that happen, planned and unplanned. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's much more of a human need, too, for me. We grow from challenges. Mm-hmm. And we grow from investing in our own personal resilience. So it's all so interconnected. There's just all these many different doorways, and they're all valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful way to capture all of that, Judy. And I'd also love it. Could you tell us a little bit about your new book?
Oh, which new book? Well, I've got one coming out in 3 weeks. I'll talk about them both. The Spirit of Project Management, which was co-written with Alan Harpam, who's the head of the Association for Project Management, which is a global accreditation body for project managers. So he and I co-wrote this book about how spirituality can take project management the next stage. And so it talks about the spiritual project manager and how he or she can get in touch with their core vision and what's the meaning and purpose of the project. It talks about things they can do with their teams. It talks about the culture of the organization and how it can support innovation and values. And it's filled with kind of exercises and checklists and real practical things that people can do. And apparently, I haven't done anything to market it because I don't know that much about project management. I mean, I manage all kinds of different projects, but I'm not trained in project management. But Alan Harpam has been traveling around the world for the last year, speaking at project management conferences from Australia to China. And I expect that this book is actually going to do much better than Edgewalkers because it's such a strange niche. And so there's a real buzz about it, and so I'm
oh,
excited.
Congratulations. That's fabulous.
Thanks. I'm excited to see what happens with that. Mm-hmm. So that'll be out July 8th and available both in the U.S. and in the U.K. And then I'm got a deadline of June 30th to finish the manuscript for the Handbook for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace, which is an edited book of the latest research and practice, what's emerging in this field of faith and spirituality. And so I've invited the leading edge practitioners, and but primarily researchers. It's really mostly research and academic about what's going on with their own research, what's going to happen next, what their vision is of the future, what's missing in the field, where they would like to see the young doctoral students focus their attention, that kind of stuff. And there's information there on each of the religious traditions and what they have to offer the workplace. There's a lot of case studies that give explicit examples of spiritual practices and faith-based organizations and all that kind of stuff, a lot of the latest research. It's just really rich. It's going to, I think it's going to be over 600 pages.
When will it be out? Do you know?
December.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, so far everything's going smoothly for deadlines. So if it continues to do that, December, I'll have end up publishing two books in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
So just the way things have unfolded. It's not normal. But
well, before we move into announcements and closing, is there anything else you'd like to tell us before we?
No, I think I'm ready for announcements and closing.
Good.
Oh, it did sound like maybe there was a question. Was there another comment?
Was there another question or comment? Yes.
No, it was Sarah Jane, and all I was saying is it sounds like your calling as a songwriter and an author is being fulfilled this year.
Yeah, it really does feel that way. And my husband and I are a duo. We just named our band. Our band is called Good Medicine.
Oh, how clever.
And we are, the recording studio is up and running. Speaking of that, I guess, yeah, I bought the recording rights to the Edgewalker book, you know, because I don't own the publishing rights. I actually, as author, had to buy the rights and now own them to do an audio book of Edgewalkers. And that recording needs to be completed and packaged and ready for sale by December. So I got some other work to do. Yeah, so that'll be fun. I just get to read the book into the microphone.
Well, that's really nice that it's going to be your voice.
Yeah, I really wanted to do it that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so were there any other comments or before we move on? Okay, so announcements. Judy, I think you've got a couple.
Well, the main thing is the Wisdom at Work conference. We haven't really started to publicize that yet, but that will be October 31st and November 1st here in Fayetteville. Today we just got an invitation to partner with the European Academy of Business in Society, which is now becoming the Global Academy of Business in Society, a very large organization of businesses and academia. They're going to partner and help promote this conference, and the president is going to be attending along with some board members. So they'll be great. He's from Brussels. So it's going to be a great international outreach. And we have the International Faith and Spirit at Work Leadership Award, and we'll be announcing the recipients of that award in a couple of weeks. And the website will be open for registration in early July. But we do have a call for proposals if people want to present at the conference. The call for proposals is on the Tyson Center website, and so we're inviting people to participate. We can't give people much time at the conference because we want as many people to be able to have a voice in the conference, so it'll be more of a dialogue than someone having a full hour workshop, for instance. But we certainly want to have everyone know what everybody else is doing, and so we're inviting proposals. And that's the big thing that we're focusing on besides my writing and research.
And the conference is fabulous. I attended last year, and I would love to hear from you, why would coaches, consultants, medical professionals, lawyers, business professionals, why would, besides academic people, why would those people be interested in attending the conference?
Well, the purpose of the conference is to bring together, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, they talk about the elephant and the blind people, and you know, people feel different parts of the elephant and no one has a sense of the whole. And we want to bring together people from different professions, different worldviews. So academics have a very different worldview than coaches or business leaders or faith leaders. And so we want to bring together people from all these different points of view to say, what do you see as going on in the field? What do you see the field needing? And how can we work together to move things ahead and support each other's work? So there's a huge emphasis on collaboration and on having measurable kinds of outcomes, whether it's papers or programs or who knows what. But we really want people to commit to working together, kind of cross-disciplinary. We will have a track, we're hoping, for the legal profession where they can get continuing education units. We're definitely going to have a track for healthcare. Professionals, they need continuing education units, and spirituality in the legal profession and in healthcare is really starting to be a very, very hot issue. Lots and lots of interest in that. So, the idea is to be something for everyone. There will be several different kinds of workshops for coaches, by coaches, about coaches. Plus, coaches will be learning about what companies are doing in terms of their practice or what different faith traditions might recommend. So it's just this really rich environment, a rich dialogue, and a great opportunity to network.
Fabulous. Thank you for that. And I believe that this series of the coaches that are connected with the Tyson Center, this is our last call in that series.
Yep.
But you're planning on another series of calls in the near future. Is that right?
Right. Yes. So what I want to do next is start a series of calls with some of the people who will be highlighted at the conference. For instance, James Autry, who is the author of Love and Profit and a couple of other books, and he's the retired CEO of Meredith Corporation, a very large publishing company. He is a man so full of heart and really committed to spirituality in the workplace. So he's one of our keynote speakers, and I'm hoping we can do a teleconference with him. We've done them with him before, and they're so moving. And Robert Ouimet, who's the chairman of the board of a company in Montreal that's been doing spirituality in the workplace for almost 40 years, he'll be a keynote speaker at the conference too, and so we're hoping to have him as a guest on the teleconference series. So we want to introduce some of these leaders to our community and have people before the conference be able to talk with them one-on-one and get to know them better and, you know, hopefully have people excited enough that they want to attend the conference and get to meet these folks in person.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to that.
Me too.
And before we complete, if people want to get in touch with you after this call and talk to you directly, how do you prefer that they reach you?
Email is the very best way to reach me because I don't know, I'm not always by my phone.
Okay.
But jneal@walton.uark.edu. I'm checking email all the time, and I think I'm mostly pretty good about responding. That's the best way. And I do hope people will go and look at the Tyson Center and see all the different resources we have there.
Yes, it's a beautiful site.
I just did post the conference links for the videos of last year's conference and the audio recording. So just that's really quite a rich resource to hear those speakers, and that's available free to anybody. So I also encourage you to go to the website.
Okay, well, thank you.
To hear from people.
Thank you for being an edge walker, Judy, and coming to Arkansas and bringing your wonderful spirituality and sense of oneness and your heart to Arkansas. And would you close for us today?
Yeah, thank you, Peggy, so much for this, and thank you, everybody, for being on the call. Yeah, it's kind of ironic that I came to the middle of the country to do edgy work.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the Michael Ray and Sherry Anderson wrote a book called Cultural Creatives, and they talk, and cultural creatives are very similar to edgewalkers. You know, a lot of crossover there, and they talk about how cultural creatives mostly live on the coast, the East Coast or the West Coast. So it's an interesting calling to come, you know, right to the middle of the country. I call it Fayetteville, Arkansas, the belly button of the country.
Yeah.
You know, we're right in the horror of the country.
Yeah.
And I guess what I would say is that all of us are being called at this time to really see the power of spirit in the world, and to manifest that, to be very practical, to serve business, because business is the most powerful institution in the world. That's where transformation needs to happen in order to solve the problems that we've got. There's so much polarization. We need bridge builders. The workplace is a great place for bridge building, because people have to work together in order to get things done. You know, from all kinds of different worldviews and diverse backgrounds. We just need to take the workplace another level of consciousness higher, to get beyond just a focus on the bottom line, and that's an important focus. But the new edge is that making a difference in the world. A lot of individuals are being called to do that, but it's time for us to be helping organizations to figure out how they can play a more positive role in a major shift that can happen in the world for good.
Well, thank you for a wonderful message for us all. And thank everybody for being here, and I look forward to playing with you much more, Judy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Peggy. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.